Nay?
This
First
is
name?
Gordon.
Hi, Gordon. Go ahead.
You'd like us just to give just a brief thumbnail?
Yes.
Sketch? Okay.
Yes, and I know after years of all that you went through, it's hard to put it in a little capsule.
Right,
but,
right. Just very briefly, I have pseudo-obstruction. It presented itself 4 years ago with bowel obstruction. That's what they thought it was when I went into the hospital. That resolved 2 years later. This is now 2 years ago. I went in with another what appeared to be a bowel obstruction. They did surgery, did a resection, but my bowels never woke up after that and still haven't to this day. So I'm TPN dependent and have been for the last 2 years. I'm basically NPO. I don't put anything in my mouth at all. Anything very, very, very difficult. I also have a PEG tube for decompression, and so I'm draining 24 hours a day everything out of my stomach so that I can be able to handle the nausea, and it does help with bloating. I'm still bloated much of the time, but at least that helps me. So I think that's enough of a description probably, but I am I'm stable. I can say that I'm stable. Nothing changes. It's just a constant dealing with the symptoms of nausea, bloating, distension, pain. On top of that, I have horrible, horrible migraines that are just last week I had five of them. They're debilitating, and they seem to come with every time I get really bloated or distended. It seems I get a migraine at the exact same time. So I haven't figured that out yet. But
well,
just,
Gordon, excuse me for interrupting, but I just wanted to let you know that that is not unusual, and we have many patients within our organization who have pseudo obstruction and also do get severe migraines. I'm included in that.
Okay.
So, and doctors have done research on that to see if there's a correlation between it.
Okay.
But, and I can certainly send you some of the articles that I've sent other people about it.
Sure.
That doesn't make you better, but at least you know that there are doctors who are researching that, and that you're not alone as far as that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, and so what do you feel, well, number one is how do you feel the quality of your life is? And number two, what do you feel is the biggest challenge right now for you?
Well, my quality of life has just gone down so greatly because I had to obviously quit work. I lost my career and lost my source of income. I have gone on disability. I'm on permanent disability now, for which I'm very, very thankful and very grateful. But I'm not able to get out a whole lot or function much. I'll have what I call a good day where I'm fairly symptom-free. And on those days, I immediately get out and try to walk at the mall or do something. But most of the time, I'm just not in any shape to do that. I'm too weak, too sick, just plain too sick. And I've tried to graph it and chart it. I would say I'm sick probably 80 to 90% of the time. So I get 10 to 20% of the time I'm somewhat symptom-free, although I'm never completely symptom-free. But that's my quality of life. In terms of my greatest challenge, if I'm honest, Mary Angela, my greatest challenge is to not live in denial.
Yes.
Even because I'm still a newbie. I've only been at this 2 years, where I've been on TPN
yes.
for 2 years. And so when I'd have a good day, I think, oh, maybe it's turning around. Maybe something's happening for the good. Maybe, and then I get smacked, and it just comes back with a vengeance. And so, you know, part of my is psychological and emotional, trying to deal with the fact that I really do have this disease. It's still hard for me to believe. It's still hard for me to take in that it's. And I wonder, you know, how long does it take a person 10 years before they just finally say, okay, I have pseudo obstruction. That's my disease. That's my disorder. That's what I have. And they accept it. I just don't know that I've fully accepted it yet. I fight as soon as I get a good moment. I think, oh, it's maybe I don't have this. And is that a typical kind of response?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even if you are seasoned with this, there are times when, you know, you do say the same thing. And you say, geez, you know, I can't go out because of the pseudo obstruction. And you're having a hard time to say, geez, I can't do this because of the disease. And that's why, depending how you're wired, depending the support that you have, depending on the intensity of the pseudo obstruction or if it's in an exacerbated mode, depending if you have other medical issues, it can be like a, how should I say this? Some people, when they get an illness, they go through that whole process of mourning to get to the acceptance. And once they do that, some of them will finally say, I've got it, okay, I understand. But other times, because of the rarity and the minimal treatments, and most patients are trying to grasp at what works for them, you will go through those periods of up and down. So you may have that bitterness, the angriness, the sobbing, the depression, all of that, and then finally you say, okay, I can handle this. This is the way it is. And then the next moment you go, oh my gosh, what's happening to me? What's happening to my life? That's all a normal process with pseudo obstruction. I don't know if anybody else has experienced that or still experienced that. I know I went through that for many years because also, first of all, you mourn the loss of the food, the way you ate. You're mourning the loss of the life that you once knew. You're mourning the loss of a job. You're mourning the loss of being able to do the things that you were able to do, the energize, all of these things, go out socially. And so you have to mourn a piece of your life or pieces of your life. Mm-hmm. And so it is very, very common. I don't know if Bethany has experienced that, or Jim has experienced that, or some of the other callers who are on the line as well. Has anybody else experienced that?
This is Bethany. Exactly what he said. And what you said. You know, I too lost a career that I worked so hard to earn. You know, I got a good 10 years in of working as a nurse practitioner, and I never dreamed I'd be on the other side of the bed. Yeah, it's just there's so many things that I used to do before I was diagnosed. I could run 3 miles with my dog. I could go skydiving. My husband and I would fly to out of the country, to like Australia. I could drink wine. We'd have all kinds of social gatherings. And now I can't even plan a doctor's appointment without knowing if I'll be able to actually go to it, you know, let alone something fun. So, and you really lose some friendships too, because I try not to talk too much about my problem or sound too negative because I don't want to burden them. But at the same time, you know, what do you do? I don't, you know, it's like I don't want to lie and say, oh, everything's great. That's my take.
Yeah.
This is Jim.
Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. Well, the situation that I face, I think, is kind of similar to the other two people, Gordon and Stephanie. I had a surgery back in 1981, and I had about 2 feet of my colon taken out. And I thought that was kind of the end of it, even though it meant that I had two surgeries, one including they had to resect it. So I spent almost 40-some days in the hospital, and they said that they revived me 3 times during the surgery because they said I had such a volvulus of a size that probably people didn't survive from, or they ended up in intensive care for 3 weeks. So at that point, I was very thankful that I didn't have to, you know, go through that. But then I think over the years, the problem just kind of got a little bit more aggravated until in 2003, I was diagnosed with chronic intestinal pseudo-obstruction or colonic pseudo-obstruction, whatever you want to call it. I think one of the things that I have maybe that other people don't have is the fact that I work in a hospital, so I have kind of a sounding board. I can talk to the physicians, ER doctors, nurses, talk to paramedics, and it's not so much to burden them with my problems, but to kind of get some input into the situation and basically to find out that the treatment that I've been following on my own is what they do in the hospital anyway. Validates that what I'm doing is effective as well as it's good medicine, if you will. Had success with that. But, you know, just like Gordon, where it does impact your life, I follow a very specific regimen. I call it my daily regimen. I do daily laxatives, Miralax, exercise, because whatever helps the motility is certainly a good thing. And I eat certain foods, although I probably eat some foods I shouldn't eat sometimes. And then every day I do enemas and things like that. So basically I'm just kind of helping the process along because of my nerves and my muscles not working real well. That's kind of the situation that I face.
Well, I think also, and I talked about this yesterday with the patient group, that even though you don't want to burden people or you don't want to shout on the mountain about it, it's great to try to use these opportunities to educate other people, whether it's in the medical field or whether it's the general public. Because once people realize that there does exist this disorder and that patients can look ill or they may look perfectly normal, but it can impact their life greatly, as well as their family and other loved ones. So it's you embrace the opportunity once you come to terms with it to teach others about it. And I think Jim has done a lot of work in that area. Am I correct, Jim?
Yes, that is. And just for the benefit of all you, I'm not trying to promote anything. But I did have an opportunity to come upon a podcast that is done by ER physicians from all over the country. And one of the things that the moderator from Portland, Oregon, admitted is that when patients come into the ER with pseudo-obstruction, the doctor has kind of a blank stare. And I think certainly patients can identify with that. And I said, well, is there some way that I can educate physicians so that that blank stare is kind of replaced by, it's like, I know what you're talking about and I can help you. So I was able to make a number of comments to this doctor, and I put them on the podcast basically to get the point across of what I'm doing and what I find that works. And the doctor appreciated that because he said a lot of doctors are not familiar with this other than if it's an acute problem. Any of you that have had surgeries, of course, under anesthesia, that becomes a real concern because how long does it take for your system to, you know, wake up, you know, motility to get started again? And I said I'm always very concerned about that. Typically where they see it, they don't see it in the chronic population, all of us folks that have it on kind of a daily basis. And if you have an opportunity to educate physicians, I think they both appreciate that if you do it in a way that doesn't make them look like they're incompetent, but rather you're trying to kind of help them along. And I think they really appreciate that because they're not always that familiar with the kind of illnesses that we have either.
Yeah. Well said. I know the emotional component that comes with, I know all too well the emotional component that comes with trying to cope with the ups and downs of living with a motility disease. And many of us live our life on the balance because you just never know when those symptoms are going to get exacerbated or another complication. such as Bethany in the hospital right now, and fear is can be rampant in your life on a daily basis. So the emotional part is one that I always highlight, because having been there, traveled this journey over 30 years, and I say this every time I talk, understand, I'm only 18 years old, but I defy science, and that's why I've had this for 30 years. Do the math. That when I began my journey, it was one of the darkest moments of my life, I will say, when the doctor tells you you are not going to live, and there's nothing we can do for you except to have the surgery, and if you don't have that, you're going to die within the year. And I mean, I just remember that darkness, and as I read parts of my journal, and I said, my God, this poor person was torn because of the emotional part of what was happening. And in my notes, I say, how is it affecting the family? I was trying to put up a big front, but you could see that it was tearing the family. There's nothing worse than a parent who can't kiss your child and make it all better. So it was a very, very low time, but I guess there are two things that carried me through this. Well, three. One is that I am blessed to have a very supportive family, and that makes a huge difference. Another thing is that I have a very, very strong faith, and that has gotten me through it. The third thing is that I have a very strong, determined, stubborn spirit, I guess you would say, the stubborn Italian, that's me. But through the organization, as I hear everybody tell about what they're going through, my heart breaks for them, but I draw strength in my commitment to see what our organization can do to help them even more. And that's why providing a form like this is, to me, a huge thing, because so many patients suffer in silence. And the world doesn't know. If the world goes on while they're just trying to deal with their own world. And some of us, I say, you know, sometimes you can feel like an alien in the world because of what you're going through. But when you hear that other people have this, and some people are, after having so many years with it, adjust, or even some people who are at the beginning of the journey, you know, pull up their sleeves and say, all right, I'm not going to let this get me down, even though it may not be that continuous fight because you have your down moment. The thing is, when you look at everything you've been through and you look at where you are now, you will get through it. You look at what you've already been through.
Yeah, Mary Angela?
Yes.
One of the things that I found really helps me, could probably help both the other people, I think, on the line as well as all your members, and that you talk about journaling, and I found that to be so helpful because I've been keeping a journal essentially since about 2003 when I was first diagnosed, and it was probably about 2006 when I really started journaling almost every day. So I know what effect the exercises had on me, what the doctor told me, so that I can go back and say, I'm having a bout today, and I can look back at my journal and go, well, I got through it on this day by doing such and such, or the doctor said that I'm doing the right thing, which both puts in my mind that, okay, just keep doing it. It's not easy, but you're doing the right thing. Doctor agrees with it. And when you have those good days, if you put that in your journal, so you can always kind of go back. I find myself going back to my journal of 5 or 6 years ago when something occurs and I go, that's how I handled it. I did handle it. Or if I'm going to be doing some running or something, and how did I prepare for that? I can go back to my journal and see exactly what I did. And that validates in my mind that I'm doing the right thing, or I put the doctor's comment in there. Because one of the things that I did, which I would not advocate for everybody, and that was when I had a colonoscopy in 2012, I did it without sedation or medication. And the doctor, you know, kind of said, well, most people don't have it done this way, but I can understand why you're doing it. And I kind of wrote that in my journal as well. And I've shared that with other people. As I said, that way I don't have the problem of the motility after the anesthesia. I'm able to get back to normal. Plus, I had to do a prep for 2.5 days because of my situation. And then if I can share that information with other people, then I feel like whatever I've gone through has been kind of beneficial. That will help somebody else out that's kind of facing some of the same things that I am.
That's great. And it is true. If you really start your journal, if you haven't already, and I know sometimes it's hard when you're not feeling well. If you can't write it, record it. But I think that when you do look back, like in Jim's case and in my case, and you see, oh my gosh, look at how I handled that. Look at what I can do to improve. Look at how I got through that comment that a doctor made or somebody else made. How would I handle it different? And truly, I believe, at least in my case, I have changed as a result of my illness. I'd like to say for the better, but it changes the way you think. It changes your perspective on life. It changes your perspective on what you're going to be bothered by or angry with, as opposed to, you know, is it worth it? I have to conserve my energy. I only have a few hours during the day that I can be productive. Do I really want to waste it on this? And no, I don't. So, but at the same time, I want to just tell people that if you are in that depressive state, first of all, you should get help. And second of all, if you are feeling down, and then another day you feel, okay, pretty good, and then the next day you're down again, it's okay. You know, you're going to forgive yourself. It's part of the whole process. It's hard to be upbeat every day when all of these emergencies are happening or you're not getting a good response or all of these other problems are happening to you. So that, I'm going to say, is normal part of the process. I think, Bethany, you can attest to that as well.
I missed it. They were just taking vital signs. Sorry.
Oh.
So I forgot. I didn't hear what you just said, but I heard my name.
I was just saying about the accepting of it. You may go through days when you say, okay, I can handle this, and then the next day you say, you know what? I'm totally depressed. I'm crying. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. And it's a yo-yo effect that can happen.
Is.
And when your health is kind of plateaued, it's never normal. But you can integrate it into your life. Like Jim has done a brilliant job of being able to integrate it in his life and educate others. I've learned to integrate it with great reluctance. With my life, we struggle all the time because I'm saying, no, body, I need to get this done today. And the body says, oh, no, you don't. Not today. It's not your day. So
that's the
most frustrating part for me. But it's that emotional roller coaster, that yo-yo that happens when you're stabilized, you're better. But when all of a sudden something happens, boom, you're back down.
Yeah, you kind of just have to go with the flow, you know, and I've just, like I said, it's as far as planning things, I used to be very meticulous, you know, about I'm going to do this on this day, and my gosh, I totally had to change that outlook, I think, like the other people with the journaling, that's definitely helped me too. I'm sure most of you know about Caring Bridge. The caringbridge.org is a website where you can write and journal and share pictures and medical information with family and friends so that you don't have to repeat the same thing 100 times to different people. And I started doing that when about 5 years ago, and I've got over 30,000 hits on it now, so I've got a
good opportunity
to have a good, I mean, I feel like my whole city is behind me, and I'm so lucky. If you haven't heard of CarryingBridge.org, you might want to think about it. And especially when I was at the beginning and going to Mayo Clinic trying to figure out what was wrong with me and really on death's door, it made it so much easier for, you know, my husband would write in my place, and that way everyone at once could find out, you know, the answer instead of phone tagging and such. So.
Yeah, that's great. Does anybody else do that? No, so it's Caring Bridge. Go ahead, Jim.
This is Gordon.
I'm sorry.
I don't use Caring Bridge, but I actually decided I was going to write a book about my experiences, and I published a book and have been able to send out to quite a few people that have pseudo-obstruction. I've had I've sent 3,100 books now, which is a lot for somebody that, you know, in this kind of, so I am corresponding with a guy in London, with a guy in Italy, with people in Western Australia. I just got yesterday a response from somebody in South Africa who has chronic intestinal pseudo-obstruction. So almost every single day I get a request from a person who is struggling and suffering, and I'm able to send out a book to them, and that gives me some purpose. I think, okay, even though I can't work a normal job, even though I've lost my career, even though I'm housebound much of the time, at least I have, I'm helping somebody else. I'm encouraging somebody else, and they're benefiting from this. So that was something, and I do journal quite a bit.
How do we get a copy of your book? This is Bethany. I'm so inspired by that because I have started writing my book too, but I've been so sick I haven't gotten it finished. But I would love to read yours.
Do you have a website, Gordon? Or
I don't want to violate anything that you said at the beginning, Mary Angela, but I'd be glad to give over the phone. I don't have any problem with giving
you
the information.
Can you email me the information?
Yes.
And then that way there, if anybody is interested, then we can
put them in contact
with you. How does that work?
Sure.
I
sent you a copy, didn't I, Mary Angela? I think you have copy of my book. I think I sent you a copy of my book.
No, I didn't receive it. I didn't receive it if you did.
Really?
Yes.
I will send you another one.
I would be honored. Thank you.
I'd be glad to. I just make them available to anybody who requests one. And,
oh, that's great.
There are enough people that have been behind me and supportive of me that the cost of the printing and the postage have all been covered. So,
Oh, wow. That's terrific. Very impressive.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. Did you, like, go to, like, one of those, like, Kickstarter groups or something to get funding for that?
No, I didn't. I'm just curious. Because I'm on disability now, I'm not allowed to make any money. If you make anything, you have to declare it, and then that's just deducted from your disability. So I just had to make it available free to people. And as I've made it available free, you know, some dear person will send me $20 and another one will send me $10 and another. And it's built up, so it's covered the cost of my printing and postage. So I'm still in the clear, yeah.
Very impressive.
I've made it available for anybody free. So I will send you an email, Mary Angela. I'll also send you out a copy of my book.
Thank you very much. And see, this is, again, what I talked about yesterday in our patient support group, that I remember when a nurse had come to me, she called and she was sobbing her eyes out. And she had pseudo-obstruction. And she had to leave her job after many, many years, and she loved what she was doing. Patients loved her, everything. But she could no longer function in the workplace. So she had to hand in her resignation, and she was sobbing to me, and she says, I have no more purpose in life. There's nothing left for me. And perhaps at that moment, the words that I spoke to her were hollow, but later she said that it really was a turnaround for her, because I had told her that her purpose is still here, but she is now taking her illness and using it to teach others. So it's to a different audience, to in a different way, and all of a sudden, and then she was working within the organization doing volunteering, and she was on top of the world. She says, I get it now. I get what you said, and it has turned my life around. And I truly believe that. Everybody who has this disease has the ability, like look at Jim. He's there teaching people about it. You got Gordon here who is writing a book about it. You have Bethany who's in the middle of a book and also uses the opportunity to teach others. And I'm sure there are other people on the call here who have done the same thing or have been thinking about it. So if you're in pause mode right now and you think, oh my gosh, what's my life? What do I have left? Think again, because you'll be very, very surprised. And the fact that all of you are here today and talking, you may not realize it, but you are holding each other up and inspiring everybody as you speak. Whether you're speaking about your problem and people can say, I can relate to that, that's inspiration, because you are planting that seed while somebody else can do this.
Yes. This is Robert. I called last month.
Hi, Robert. My second call.
Hello, everybody. What I wanted to say is, when it comes to like jobs and transition in life, I think that's a common thing that everyone with chronic intestinal obstruction goes through. And what has helped me is my life philosophy. Now my life philosophy is a little quirky. I'm what they call an existentialist. So to me, life already was meaningless, but I create meaning out of the meaningless. So, you know, when something bad happens, you know, I think, okay, how can I create meaning out of this? How can I define myself and conquer this? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a different thought process, of course. Everyone has their own ways of dealing with things, and whatever helps, of course, helps. And I'm not disputing any of that, but, you know, I just wanted to put that out.
Yeah, no, it's you're right. Whatever works for you, we're all individuals sharing a common thread. And we have
Definitely.
To do whatever we have to do in order to get through this journey. And as you're going through it, accepting and touching people's lives. And that's what will happen. And even in your dark moments, you are still helping others, believe it or not. Because if you have to go to the hospital in an emergency, the doctors may not get it, although Jim's working on that really hard in the emergency room. We want to take him and bring him to all of the hospitals around the world so that all of them will respond and understand. But, you know, you make a difference, and you are making a difference in your suffering and or through your suffering. So we have some other people on the line. Does anybody else want to jump in? No. If you do, just call out my name, but say, Mary Angela, I want to say something, and then I can get you in. But, I think because day to day there is that unpredictable nature about this.
Mary Angela, this is Jim. I need to step away for about 2 minutes. I'll be right back.
Okay, you're going to educate somebody. Good.
No, I'm going to the... the little general's room.
Oh, perfect timing. Robert, did you want to say something?
Yes, I wanted to add up. Before I found out of my diagnosis, I was misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder. And when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I just wanted to say about getting help when you're depressed. It's always good to look for, I think, because of our guts, you know, just like Jim was saying when he had this colonoscopy, you know, avoiding certain drugs. I found antidepressants and antipsychotic medications to actually worsen my condition. And now I'm in a chronic stage. I was in an acute stage before I took those medications. So, you know, always be wary of what you're taking and how it can affect your intestines. But that's the advice I wanted to give, especially when it comes to depression.
Yeah, well, in some patients, doctors prescribe, depending on what type of motility or the circumstances, they will actually prescribe the antidepressant to help with the movement of the intestinal tract. However, and some people on depression do find that it's very helpful, and yet other patients do find, like Robert, that there is, the side effects that can accompany that. And many of us with pseudostructures,
right?
I'm sorry?
It's good to know both the successes and sometimes that there is failure.
It is.
So, you know what I mean?
It is. Because
right?
It's absolutely, and it's very individual in nature. Many of us have sensitivities or allergies to things that we were able to take even as a child, or all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you kind of get sensitive to these things. Certainly, I think that the autoimmune system plays a very important part in this. So, and just like Gordon was saying, he gets migraines, and that's something that has not shocked me because I experience it myself and so many other patients do. So there are, again, very common threads between so many patients. And that's why with pseudobstruction, they're doing research, but they're not doing enough research, and it's not coming fast enough for all of the patients by it. So, you know, with gastroparesis, they're doing a tremendous amount because gastroparesis, that's the paralysis of the stomach, or slow emptying of the stomach, can affect diabetics. And there are so many diabetics in this world that gets a little bit more of a boost with research. And so does an irritable bowel. That's out there a lot. But when you have pseudobstruction, people still look like, you know, deer in headlights with it. And it's so unfortunate, but that's our job as patients and family members to tell people about it and explain it and also understand, though. I know in my experience, I remember people not understanding when I would tell them, and one actually made a scene in front of everybody and said, "You can drink tea. Why can't you drink that? Why can't you eat that? That doesn't make sense. I think you have an eating disorder." I mean, all of you, I'm sure, have had problems like that. And it hurt so badly, and I made the decision that I was not going to have people hurt me anymore in that way. I came to the realization that there are some people who you do tell as much as you can to, and that is mostly my family. There are some people who you just tell a little bit to. And then there are some people who you know that they're just not going to get it, or they're not interested, and so you don't bother with them. And then there's some people who just absolutely, no matter how hard you try to explain, they don't get it.
Amen. My mom is saying amen to you right now.
Amen is right. Amen.
Amen.
And that's part of the acceptance of saying, look, do you want this hurt to really carve your heart out because you're suffering with enough things? Does it really matter if this person is not willing or doesn't get it? It's beyond their capability. Is it worth it for you to waste your breath on that and your energy? And the answer, in my case, is no. I'd rather spend it with a different audience, you know, get you educate as much as you can, but you can't force it down people's throats. experience.
Mary Angela, what do you say to the people? What have you learned to say to the people who say, oh, it's great to see you. You're looking so well.
Yeah, and I had a whole open discussion, that Let's Talk series on that, and we are going to be repeating that a couple of times because it's such a hot topic. But what I typically have learned to do, because I can't tell you, well, I can tell you, the hurt that gave me was overwhelming, because you're suffering so greatly, and there are people mm-hmm. are saying, oh, you look great. And honestly, mm-hmm. sometimes you want to look good just to give you some normalcy, but you also yeah. want people to understand mm-hmm. and that you're not, you know, that you're really, really sick. So we are creating like mixed signals on our own. But, and it seems like when you are feeling at your worst, it's when people say, oh my gosh, you look great.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So what I have learned, because I do have a sense of humor, is to just say, of course, I always look good. Thanks. And you look great too. How is everything going with you? So I put it back. I take the focus off of me and I put it back on them.
Well, this
and
is Jim
most
again.
Most people are so willing to talk about themselves.
This is Jim. Yeah.
Jim. Hi, Jim.
Just a couple of real quick items. Since I work in a hospital and I'm an EMT, one of the things that I found, I think the reason people suffer in silence is because even as an EMT, I can talk about accident scenes and I can talk about the gore of accidents. But when you start talking about something as basic as intestinal functions and things like that, people get kind of squeamish, even paramedics. It's like they kind of want to steer clear of that. They know that it exists and they know that it's a part of daily life, but hope for people to talk about. And the second point was, I kind of wore the comment about, you know, you're looking pretty good, especially when my doctor says that. Because when I saw my gastroenterologist in January, he said, Jim, you always look very healthy. And I take that as, well, I guess I'm doing the right thing then. And he said, yes, you are, because I do get distended a lot. I get bloated a lot. That's probably one of the most common symptoms that I have. And that's also one of the most common signs that I show. And that's the part that really bothers me the most. It's like, well, if I can go see the doctor and he says, boy, you know, look like you're pretty healthy, but yet he knows that that's not the case. It's like, well, okay, I guess I'm taking pretty good care of myself then, and you're pretty much agreeing with what I'm doing. Yes, I am. Okay, great. And that's what I put down in my journal. It's like, yeah, doctor says I'm doing the right thing. Keep it going. Or I talk to a paramedic who's a good friend of mine who's a nurse. Said, Jim, I guess just keep doing it. If it works for you, that's great. You know, so I think you take that kind of as a maybe a positive badge rather than as a negative. And for those that say, well, you know, you're looking pretty good when in fact I'm feeling miserable, it's like, well, I guess it's not showing.
Right.
Yeah. But I also think that a lot of patients who have had to defend their symptoms, maybe it's mm-hmm. taken a little while for them to get diagnosed, or, you know, they've been to so many doctors, nurses, general public who don't believe them, you immediately go into that defense mode. And mm-hmm. I hear Bethany going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a response that you're almost conditioned to do because of your history with pseudo obstruction. Bethany, do you want to expand on that?
Am I on mute? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny because when I go to the ER to a doctor's appointment or something, my husband will say, oh my God, you got makeup off. Take your makeup off. You look too good. They're not going to think you're sick. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, it's like I shouldn't have to, like, undo myself so that I look as sick as I can. You know, I can't help that I look normal. If my guts were on the outside, I would look hideous, you know. But I just, I think I'm going to name the title of my book, But You Look So Good. But, you know.
That's very good.
I want to
but
read
on
it.
The other hand, I think a lot of people, you know, I think they just don't know any better. And I think a lot of friends and family, they don't get it, and they really are trying to be nice, you know, and I understand.
How about that surgeon last night that didn't even read that elderly report this year?
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to say that, but anyways, I don't know what to say. It's just frustrating.
It is frustrating, but if you can, go ahead.
Oh, the other thing that's frustrating is that the doctors that I come across, like in this hospital stay, for example, that really don't understand what pseudo-obstruction is, and because they don't understand it, therefore it does not exist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically last night when I was on all fours, writhing in pain, my heart rate was 150, my blood pressure was through the roof, I was drenched in sweat, and he said, boy, you really are putting on a show. He said, they think I'm just, putting on an act so I can get more pain medication, and I'm just like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm like, you can't fake a bowel obstruction. You can't fake, it's like, I don't understand how they can just blow it off. If I had colon cancer, I would be treated like a queen, you know, because they would understand what that is. And so, you know, but having a rare disease, it just makes it so impossible to get fair treatment. I wish the word was out, and I know that we've spoken about, too much information has already crammed down medical students, to where they can't fit even one more ounce of information in, but I really think that has to change in order for us to move forward with any progression in this disease. Because I think the older doctors, they're not going to learn any new tricks. I think we need to focus on the doctors that are learning now and somehow reach out to them. And another huge pet peeve of mine, and this, just from my work as being a nurse practitioner, and when I see just other friends of mine that are professionals, they would look at other people's charting and make an opinion about a patient before they even saw the patient for themselves. And I think, sometimes when you go into the ER, the person, before they walk in to see you, they read this horrible note and say, oh, this person's a drug seeker. She says she has a severe disease. And instead of giving you, an opportunity to, present yourself and make your own opinion, they borrow the other person's opinion. And it just continues down the line. And in fact, at a hospital, I have a physician friend who quit at an ER department in my hometown because they had a pact among the emergency physicians that if they thought someone was a drug seeker, they would write their name on a list. And even if you had never seen that patient before, if you saw that patient's name pop up and you were taking care of them, you had to agree to treat them as horrible as possible and, basically bully them. It was a pact of bullying. So she quit and she moved to a different hospital. But these kinds of things go on. And that is the most infuriating thing out of the entire process for me, is the way that I'm treated at the hospital.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in many cases, first of all, when you are going through even the diagnosis, you are kind of stripped little by little of your dignity as you sit there with a Johnny on a cold table, and then you have to go through some of the tests where they're putting things up your behind or putting things down your throat. It is a very humbling experience, to say the least. So if you have any type of modesty or you have a self-esteem that isn't intact, little by little, it can chip away at it. But eventually what happens is, like when I go to the doctor, okay, here I am. Do what you have to do.
Right.
If you want to put something up there, okay, I get it now, because you no longer feel self-conscious, but you're there to try to get the help that you need. And again, I would use the opportunity to teach. And on that note, we are now running out of time for the meeting. And I just want to tell all of you to, of course, I want to thank you for coming to our first pseudo-obstruction support group on online and internet. And I just really, my deepest thoughts are with all of you. I hope today you'll take some time to reflect on what we've talked about, and perhaps you will remember in your moments that you are not alone, that you do understand, and that along your journey, even though I'm so sorry you're going through it, you are making an impact, and you are changed as you go through the process, but you're learning as you go through the process and imparting what you learn to others. You are all extraordinary heroes in my eyes, and I'm just extremely honored that you have been willing to share a piece of your world with all of us here today. Certainly, I can't convey in adequate words how grateful I am for all of you. And on that note, I invite you all. On Monday, we have an open discussion, and that's going to be part of our Let's Talk series, saying goodbye to food. That's on Monday at the same time, 12 to 1. And we will be having our next food obstruction group. It's tentatively marked for April 23rd. That's on a Wednesday. Any other questions before we go, or any other closing comments quickly before the meeting clips us off?
No, I'll be waiting for you to call me back, Mary Angela.
All right. Thank you all again, and I pray that you have a positive day with some good things happening in it.
Good luck to all of you. This has been informative. Yeah. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you.
So much.
Yeah.
It's been excellent.
Thank you. Okay.
Good luck to all
God
of you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.